This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Charlotte is growing fast, and as people move here, they're bringing their cars with them. Development is increasing density, putting more people into tighter spaces. Meanwhile, roads are not being widened. New inner city roads aren't being built, and that means more traffic. The city is struggling to keep up, and that means you're spending more time in your car getting from one place to another. Charlotte has the worst traffic congestion in the state. Commuters are spending 40 hours a year dealing with that congestion. When light rail became a reality about 10 years ago, it brought the promise of alleviating at least some congestion and reducing the number of cars in areas served by the Blue Line. But that hasn't come to fruition, and as the line expands, development does too, and with it comes more cars. Are we headed for gridlock? Let's find out, and let's hear about what planners are going to do with and about all these cars. Dan Gallagher is planning manager for the Charlotte Department of Transportation. Good morning. Welcome to you.
Good morning.
Ed McKinney is the city's interim planning director. Welcome back.
Good morning.
John Muth is deputy director of the Charlotte Area Transit System. Welcome.
Morning, Mike.
And Shannon Binns is founder and executive director of Sustain Charlotte, a community-based nonprofit dedicated to educating, engaging, and uniting citizens to solve Charlotte's sustainability challenges. Welcome back.
Thank you.
A new report issued earlier this month by TRIP, which is a nonprofit transportation research group in Washington, revealed what we already knew. If you get in your car any time of the day now, traffic in Charlotte is bad. It also revealed that traffic is actually worse than we thought because we have the worst congestion in the state. Did that come as a surprise to any of you? Dan, I'll start with you. Was it a surprise to you?
Sure. Probably not. As you know, Charlotte's been growing rapidly, as you said in your introduction remarks. And as we came out of the recession, traffic levels have increased. We've seen enormous amount of growth. I'm sure Ed can elaborate, but we believe we're the second fastest growing large city in the entire country. Mm-hmm. So increasing traffic certainly is something we are grappling with, something that we're considering as we think about plans for the future, both how we manage growth as well as the infrastructure that's necessary to keep pace with that type of development.
And there was another study that came out recently that said that Charlotte and Raleigh, both cities in the Carolinas, are growing, but Raleigh is growing out, which is something Charlotte can't really do anymore because of we're landlocked now. Can't acquire new land from county areas. So we're building up, and that increases densification, packing more people onto the old streets that we've had for a century now. So this didn't come as a surprise. Have we adequately planned for this, Ed?
It certainly doesn't come as a surprise. If we think about the benefits of cities and why cities exist, it's really to provide the connectivity of jobs, of employment, of cultural and educational institutions. And those things, when you can concentrate them, the end result is cities will have congestion. The best managed cities have congestion. And really the challenge and the opportunity for us in Charlotte is how do we manage that growth and how do we manage that congestion? And we've a long history, the last 20, 30 years, of really putting our investment in places like our transit corridors and our activity centers. We have growth policies around that to ensure that we are making decisions about our investment, making decisions about how we really intend for growth to occur, so that we have choices, that we're putting density where we anticipated it, that we have transit that would support it, that we're putting transportation infrastructure to manage that. But ultimately, the congestion will be there. That's part of the economic growth of our city, and it's really the job for us is to manage that and provide as many choices as we possibly can.
But are we going to choke on this eventually? I mean, to the average person who is not a city planner, who goes down South Boulevard, for instance, through South End, and they see all of the apartments that are cropping up and down South End, up and down South Boulevard, and then back toward the western side of South End, and you wonder, well, you know, they're letting 10,000 apartments, which means at least probably 10,000 cars that weren't here before on the same street that was already jammed. What are they thinking? So what are you thinking?
Well, think about those 10,000 units spread across the city in ways that we couldn't manage effectively. So the notion here is we want that growth to be in places where we put transit investment, where we've put development policies to ensure that there's a walkable urban environment, that the residents have choices, that they're closer to the places that they work, that they're closer to the places that they shop. So some of those trips are used in transit. Some of those trips are used by walking or by biking. So those are intentional things and intentional decisions we've made about where we want our growth to occur. And agreed, still, we will have congestion in those places. But now we've given an environment and a place that those residents have choices, and they're closer to the things that they do daily with multiple ways to get around.
So you're saying, I want to be clear here, because people, the average person who drives through town who used to be able to get anywhere in 10 minutes and now it takes 20 or 30 minutes, and they're yelling at the traffic in front of them and around them and behind them, you're saying that we knew what allowing this kind of development would do to traffic congestion, and we were okay with it. That's what you're saying.
Well, the alternative was to let that growth go anywhere. And so our growth policies have been intentional about where we want that to occur, make sure that we've got the investment in those places to support it.
So this is not just happening in South End, up and down South Boulevard. It's happening in other places. It's about to happen on 7th Street through Elizabeth. It's been happening out in Plaza Midwood for a long time. Just going back to South End for just a couple of seconds, John Muth, Ed mentioned transit options. Do you feel that there are sufficient transit options in that corridor right now for people, and are you having an impact on traffic in that area?
Well, I think certainly having the Lynx Blue Line in that corridor is, you know, an alternative that folks in other corridors around the city don't have. So I think it's making an impact. Typically, when folks think of congestion, they're looking at what happens in the peak hours when they're driving to and from work. So we're able to provide a service where people can lock in on a ride that's going to be a consistent time, 25 minutes, let's say, from the end of the Blue Line down towards 485 into downtown, and that time is going to be consistent over the years as the growth continues to occur. So we've never pitched transit as a solution to congestion, but rather an alternative for folks to consider, whether you're on the train and you're kind of outside of that congestion, or even if you're on a bus where you can maybe do some things that you can't do when you're driving your car, like read or text or things like that.
If transit isn't an option to congestion, what is? Shannon, is it bicycles? Is it walking? What is it?
Well, it's all of those things, but I want to just frame this up a little differently. And, really we can look at traffic as an economic problem. It's a supply and demand problem, right? So we have a limited supply, in this case, of road space, mm-hmm. and we have a growing demand for that limited space. And when you have a supply and demand problem with any product in a marketplace, you either grow the supply or you try to reduce demand, right? And so intuitively, we think that we just need to grow the supply. We just need to build more roads. But what happens, that's akin to making, currently what we do, we sort of make roads essentially free, right? So it's like if ice cream were free and everybody wanted ice cream and it was running off the shelves, we wouldn't say, well, just let's make a lot more ice cream. Because what would happen? A lot more people would get in line for ice cream because now there's even more of it, right? And it's going to last longer. So if we take that approach to roads and just build and build and build, all we do is increase demand for driving. So what we have to do is we have to do a whole host of things, which these other folks have talked about. The reason we want density in the city is because that makes it easier to attract multiple businesses and residences and things that people can walk to or bike to or ride transit to. The more spread out we are, the harder it is to support transit and support walking and support biking. So it's a fact where we have to decrease demand, not just increase supply. And there's a lot of things we have to do to decrease demand for driving.
And Dan Gallagher, we can't build more roads, really, can we? Because if we're going to densify the areas that we have, that means putting buildings where possibly roads could go. But we can't even widen them, can we?
Yeah. So actually, I take a little bit different approach.
Okay.
It's a big city. It's 300 square miles. Put that in perspective. That's six times the land area of San Francisco. So the answer is yes, we can build roads, and we are building roads. In the last 10 years, we've spent over $500 million.
But isn't that in the outlying areas?
Oh, definitely.
The newly developing
Absolutely.
Outlying areas.
Correct. Yeah. It's a big city, and so there are many roads that still need to be widened and that we consistently invest in widening roads, widening intersections, building complete streets in those areas when we are implementing projects in those areas. But at the same time, going back to what Shannon said and really Ed and John also, we also need to use our system more efficiently. And part of that is the land use answer that you're hearing these gentlemen say. An area like South End is pretty efficient. We know the people in those areas travel fewer vehicle miles of travel per day. That's efficient for us. That's one way of addressing our growth challenges is by providing areas of town where people can either, if they choose to drive a car, they're driving it for fewer miles, or they have other options that are available to them, whether it be light rail, whether it be biking, whether it be the rail trail that runs parallel to through the South End area. Those are options for people.
No one's mentioned the bus.
Okay.
So, is there a reason for that?
I think we've been talking about South End and in the far-flung areas, but certainly bus component is certainly important. Maybe John can answer.
Yeah, one of the things that as we look at our bus system, you know, it's been around for many years, 40, 50 years, and it's radially oriented in and out of town. And what we find as we talk with our customers is that always isn't as efficient as they need it to be because they have to ride in on one road to get to downtown, make a transfer, and head back out. So we're currently underway with a kind of a revisiting or revisioning of our bus network called Envision My Ride, mm-hmm. where we're looking at the resources we have and, you know, is there a way to deploy those same hours of bus service in a more efficient manner? So we're out there now talking with customers. We know that folks want maybe more crosstown service, again, to get away from that having to ride in to town on one bus and transfer to the other. So we're looking at our system to see how we can make changes and improvements to make it, more usable for folks.
Is it still a challenge to get some people to ride the bus, to even consider riding the bus? Is that still a challenge? Because it used to be a challenge.
Well, we've seen, steady ridership increases. Back in 98, we carried about 12 million people on bus, and now we carry about, say, 20 million. So with the improvements we've been able to make since 98 with the sales tax, we've seen a steady increase in ridership, and I think we've seen a lot of ridership on the light rail and on our buses, our express buses. So we know there's a lot of choice riders that use our system.
We are told that 44 people a day are moving to Charlotte. I don't know that means 44 additional cars every day because some of those people are children, but it's around, 10, 20 cars a day for at least 44 people. And that, to me, is explosive growth. Is it? Is that big?
Yeah, absolutely it is. I think I mentioned before we're the second
fastest-growing
large city in the country.
And Ed McKinney, you are the city's interim planning director, and you've been the interim planning director since 2014. we're exploding with growth. Why do we only have an interim planning director? Why are they just now launching the search?
Well, so we are continuing to do the things we need to do to plan for the growth that we're in. So
saying that you're not, but why don't they just give you the title?
All I'll say is, we've got our staff and our team working, head on with the issues that we face every week, every month, with the rezoning cases that are ahead of us, using the development investment that's coming to build the places that we want. So we've got very strong and intentional growth policies that are really trying to create a new community around these kind of walkable urban places.
So only have about 10 seconds here, but if you were the permanent planning director, would you have more power? Would you have more self-assurance that you could do what you think is right because you had the title and you had the job permanently?
No. We've continued to do all the things that we need to do. We've got all the power and the support that we need to do the things we need to do with the growth that's coming.
We're going to take a break. We're going to talk about the growth that's coming. We're going to talk about congestion and what's being done to try to alleviate at least some of it and provide more options when we come back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Mecklenburg County Park and Recreation, hosting the 2017 Live on the Green at First Ward Park, featuring Americana and bluegrass music Friday evenings, June through September. Open to the public, details at uptowncharlotteparks.com. And from Greer Walker, a certified public accounting firm with a team of more than 100 professionals, providing assurance, tax, and business advisory services to middle market companies in the Carolinas. Details at GreerWalker.com. Beginning with last year's election, the words fake news and alternative facts entered our vocabulary. But is this practicing of challenging truth a new one? NPR's On the Media host Brooke Gladstone dissects reality, fake news, and alternative facts as strategy in her new book, The Trouble with Reality. She joins guest host Eric Spanberg on Charlotte Talks tomorrow morning at 9 here on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE.
I'm Jessica Yellen. Coming up on the next On Point, a historian tells us old superpower U.S. and rising superpower China are on a collision course for war, and only careful and painful politics will prevent it. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
Join On Point following Charlotte Talks from 10 to noon here on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about traffic and congestion and how it's growing as 44 people per day move to Charlotte, the second fastest growing city in the country. We're talking about all this with Dan Gallagher, planning manager for Charlotte DOT, Ed McKinney, the interim planning director for the city of Charlotte, John Muth is deputy director of CATS, and Shannon Binns is founder and executive director of Sustain Charlotte. You know, congestion is due to people driving on our roads. Imagine that. Why do people drive? They have to get from point A to point B, and there are very few options, it would seem to me. But Shannon, you have a better answer than that?
No, it's that, but I want to kind of dig into that a little bit. So Charlotte, like most cities in America over the last six-plus decades, have really designed the city as it's grown around the assumption that everybody will get around for every trip by driving. Mm-hmm. So we have, you know, 60 plus years of growth that's been built for, you know, automobility or mobility by car. So, you know, now we're trying to sort of redirect the ship, if you will, and we're trying to make our city walkable and bikeable and transit friendly, but that doesn't just happen overnight. So we have this huge challenge. And so the reason why people drive is because that's really the only safe, convenient option for a lot of people to get to where they want to go quickly, mm-hmm. right? Which isn't to say there aren't times and there aren't situations where transit or biking or walking are convenient, but you know, we're rational beings. So we choose, you know, the most convenient option available to us. So the real way we're gonna decrease demand for driving, as I was saying earlier, is critical, is we need to make transit, walking, and biking at least as convenient, at least as safe, at least as attractive as driving. And right now, that's not the case in Charlotte. But we're doing everything I think we can. Well, almost everything. There's things we're not doing that we could be doing to move us more in that direction.
I guess we're playing catch-up in a lot of ways. I know that we saw some of this development and this growth happening, but probably not to the degree maybe that it's happening. We have all these 25-year plans, and I think sometimes they are playing catch-up because, Ed, we're operating on zoning ordinances here that are, what, 23 years old, and yet changing demographics and changing expectations, like the one that Shannon is talking about, are they have to change the nature of development. Are we keeping pace?
We are, but we have more to do. So you're right. We have some of our parts of our development ordinances are older and really date to the kind of environment that Shannon was just talking about. But we've have over time updated them. We do have a transit-oriented development zoning district that was specifically designed to take advantage of this transit investment that we're making. We've updated our other development ordinances around saving trees, around our subdivision requirements to make sure that we provide connectivity. So we have updated our ordinances to keep up with it, but there's more to do. You know, an example back to this notion of congestion and traffic and development, and one of the big drivers for development is parking. So, you know, how do we provide, or should we provide, or require parking in certain areas? That's a good debate to have. One of the things we did do in our transit-oriented development zoning district was reduce the minimum requirements. So we did take one small step that said, in those places where we knew we had that transit investment, we weren't going to require as much parking as we normally would. Certainly, the development community and the market has yet to fully respond to that, but that gives you an example of how we've taken the zoning and development tools we've have and begin to kind of tailor them to the investment and the kind of the place we're trying to make in Charlotte.
Well, let's talk about that, because all these apartments, these new mid-rise apartments, are most of them are frame construction wrapped around this cement parking deck that is hidden from view, which is very nice, I suppose, and if you have these enormous apartment developments and you have cars associated with every bedroom in that a space associated with every bedroom in that unit, that that's a lot of cars in a small area. And if you don't provide parking, where do they put those cars? On the street?
So I have a couple of thoughts on that, Mike. I think, you know, some cities have either encouraged or required that developers unbundle the cost of the parking from the rent itself. And we don't do that here.
Meaning?
So it means when you pay a rent for your apartment, the cost that it costs the builder to build that parking and provide that land to you to store your car mm-hmm. is built into your rent. And it's estimated, you know, it adds, you know, 20% to 30% of your rent is actually paying for your parking space. So, you know, in cities who have unbundled it, meaning you can rent a space for your car separately mm-hmm. from renting the place where you actually live in the building, what that does is it puts a price on it. And then people can make a choice. Do I really want to own and store a car for an extra $200-$300 a month?
But won't the other part of that choice be, do I really want to pay that extra fee for parking? I'll just put it on the street in this suburban or inner city neighborhood where parking is already at a premium.
So the way cities deal with that is you have to have a permit to park on the street. A lot of cities, you know, you have to have a permit to park on that particular street, and it's limited to, you know, to people who live in that area or have some other restrictions on it. So,
but if I'm in an apartment, I live in that area, right?
Well, it may be that it doesn't extend to people that live in the parking lot or live in that particular development.
Wow.
But here's the other thing. There's been a lot of national research on this issue too. And what happens is as Ed was saying, the market's been slow to respond to this. So there's an assumption that everybody who lives there wants to have a parking space. And we're overbuilding parking in many parts of our city where those spaces are not being fully utilized. So there's a lag here between, you know, what people really want and what we're actually providing. And that goes to the point Ed made earlier about along the blue line. All of those apartments that have been built along the blue line aren't actually required to provide parking, but the developers are still building it. So we also need, you know, sort of a little more risk taking from the developers to provide
less
parking.
Well, it is a risk.
Too.
If they don't supply parking, isn't that a disincentive for a lot of people not to rent in your building? I'll just go down to the street and find another brand new apartment I can move into that does have parking attached.
Well, that's why policy is critical. So what we've been advocating for is parking maximums as well. So if every apartment building has to put a maximum on the amount of spaces they build, then it's a level playing field.
So, John, you're with CATS. If that were to happen, could CATS handle? Are you equipped to handle all these people who now won't have cars or because there's no place to park them, so they'll just take the bus? Because the Lynx only goes to two places at the moment, Uptown and the outskirts of Pineville. If you want to go to South Park, if you want to go to Elizabeth, if you want to go to Noda, you aren't taking the Blue Line yet.
Right, and you know, our ability to provide, you know, continue to ramp up bus service is dependent on funding. And right now, we have kind of a financially stable model, mm-hmm. so we don't have a lot of money right now projected out to expand our bus services. That's one of the reasons we're also doing this Envision My Ride effort, is to see if we can more efficiently put out there the resources we have today. But we also have to have the conversation about you know, the need for more resources in this community for all kinds of transportation improvements. And I just thought one comment on the growth. Back in the mid-90s when we were doing this work for the 2025 Transit and Land Use Plan, at mm-hmm. that time the population in Mecklenburg County was projected to reach 1 million people by the year 2025. So we know that we reached 1 million people in Mecklenburg County in 2015. So the growth is much greater, you know, than we've forecast. And, you know, you kind of think, how can it continue that rapidly? But it happens. And when us in the planning business rely on these projections, so lots of times we're probably working off of numbers that don't reflect, you know, how rapid the growth is going to be and how quickly they're going to come here.
When you folks in the planning business are planning, are you taking, if citizens are your customers, are you taking customer desires into account, or are you simply just trying to supply what has to happen because of the rampant growth in this area? In other words, we are told that millennials, many of them, don't even want to own a car. They want no part of it. They're happy with a bike. They're happy with walking. They're happy with public transportation. Is that true? Are you finding that true? And if it is true, can you keep up with that demand? And if it, or do you even pay attention to that? You're just trying to make it through the day.
Yeah, so I think that's a great question. I think there are many different customers out there. So going back to my earlier comment, it's a big city and there's many different places and place types across the city. I do think that there are people, our residents, some that are demanding more transportation choices. That tends to happen in the more in-town neighborhoods where people are seeking – they've purposely sought to live in a place like that where they either have more transportation choices or proximity to the land uses that they want to get to. But at the same time, we also do have suburban growth still occurring in Charlotte, and that requires a different solution. So when our plans try and account for that. We're trying to account for the areas where you can live a car-light lifestyle option if you so choose. But then there's also parts of town where right now it is an auto-dependent development pattern. We're responding to that. But at the same time, maybe doing things a little differently. So over time, those areas can have some transportation choices too.
We have the Charlotte Transportation Action Plan, and we have the Transit Systems Plan. These are coordinated plans. They work together?
Absolutely.
The Transit Action Plan recommends spending $5.1 billion, with a B, billion dollars to maintain the 12-year street resurfacing cycle, which means every 12 years your street gets repaved.
That's correct.
To operate 750 signalized intersections and add additional signals, construction of 100 major roadway projects, 250 miles of new sidewalks, 250 miles of bike facilities, meaning what? Special bike lanes?
Bike lanes, bike trails, protected bike lanes, bike routes through neighborhoods that connect neighborhoods to other neighborhoods.
And 150 traffic calming projects. What is a traffic calming project?
Yeah, that can really range from something really small, an intervention in a neighborhood, to something broader, which is actually like a road diet or streetscape project. That makes it easier on a busier road to get people along and across those roadways, pedestrians, bicyclists, transit users.
So that's a $5 billion plan over how long a period of time?
25 years.
So that's, when you come right down to it, that's not all that much money, is it, in the scheme of things? I mean, it's a lot of money, but when you break it out to over 25 years, if you were able to do all this, what would it be like? What would Charlotte be like in 25 years?
I think if we were to do all that, we're a city that's better keeping pace with its growth and providing more transportation choices and helping to keep pace with the level of growth that's coming to Charlotte. Embedded in that plan are 100 road projects, 40 intersection projects, many sidewalk and bikeway projects. If you fast forward and all that was in place, I think people would look back and say that was a pretty critical time in Charlotte's history where they made a choice, a major investment, and really changed what Charlotte looks like for existing residents as well as future generations.
There's congestion, increasing congestion all over the city, but you really notice it in the inner city of Charlotte because that's what we're focusing on. We're focusing on densification. And Eli Portillo, who was writing about this in the Charlotte Observer a couple of weeks ago, referred to all these apartments in South End, and the idea was, the hope, I guess, was that when these apartments went up and we densified South End along the Blue Line, that everybody would hop the train and they wouldn't be using their cars, and that hasn't turned out to be the case. He says it wasn't supposed to be this way. The dense urban developments along Charlotte's light rail were supposed to show the city a new path forward, away from its post-World War II history as a car city. Well, more apartments are coming along the Blue Line extension toward the north. Are we going to see what's happened in South End happen there, or have we learned lessons from that?
I would take a little bit of issue with the diagnostic of what's going on in South End. I think to the earlier point, the mix of trips, the use of transit has increased. The options are there. It is dense. It's more intense, and there is congestion. But certainly, the investment that we've made is paying off. We're providing options for folks to use transit for a whole range of trips, and we anticipate that to continue when the system expands. And the Blue Line is really just one part of our longer system. So we have a vision ultimately that provides connectivity, transit connectivity throughout the city. And putting that growth in those places with access to that transit is really part of a long-range vision and plan that we have in place.
And Shannon, you were advocating a minute ago with these new apartment developments as they go up, changing the way developers and the city thinks about this, not mandating that they have parking spaces for every bedroom. Let people decide for themselves whether they need to – and make them pay extra for it if they do that. Is the horse out of the barn on that already, or is it, or are there plans in the works to make that happen going forward in some of these areas?
Well, as Ed said, the problem along the Blue Line is not that the city's requiring parking, because they're actually not requiring any parking at all. Mm-hmm. Developers are building it because they think they have to, as you said earlier, in order to attract tenants. But there really isn't a lot of evidence to support that. But the other thing is we're at a transition point, I think, as a city. I mean, we still don't have a lot, as I was saying earlier, good competition for driving. And what I mean by that is we don't have our transit system is not yet right. as attractive as driving. Neither is biking and walking, because we don't have a lot of safe places to walk and bike. So, you know, it's going to take some time for people to fully stop using their car all the time in mass. But there are some people, a large number of people, who don't own a car and don't drive. In fact, the city will tell you about 30% of people in Charlotte don't own a car and mm. you know, are getting around somehow, some way. So we should keep that in mind as well.
The reason people in New York City can get by without owning a car is because their transportation options are immense. They have the subways, they have buses, et cetera. They have taxi cabs in every square inch of the city. Until and unless we build out our light rail system to the airport and to South Park, to Ballantyne, to Matthews, extend commuter rail to Davidson and Cornelius and Huntersville, until the streetcar goes from the west side to the east side. Is this really a possibility? Can we really expect any impact on congestion until we have all of those options up and running and in place?
Well, I think you mentioned about how things evolved after World War II and, mm-hmm. you know, over many years and several decades, and I think you're going to need to see these investments aren't being made for, you know, tomorrow or the day after one light rail line opens that suddenly congestion is going to be gone. This is to serve the community looking out 50 and 100 years.
It has to be a system.
Right. And we're working towards that. We're getting ready to undertake some studies this summer. We're going to take a fresh look at the airport, mm-hmm. The West Corridor, and the corridor up to the north. Look at, you know, what would be appropriate light rail. Alignments to serve them.
One of the things that happened after World War II is the interstate highway system, which I guess you could argue that it was for the automobile manufacturers' lobby and the oil lobby because the other option was going to be extending train service throughout the country as opposed to the interstate highway system. But that required an enormous investment over time. Is there political will for the kind of enormous investment it will take to expand our transportation system? There doesn't seem to be that will anywhere in the country, much less the state.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm not sure about the political will, but I think when you talk to citizens, I think folks are willing to invest in
No, they're not, because that means taxes. And everybody votes for people who say, we're not going to raise your taxes, we're going to cut your taxes.
If you don't pay
taxes, there will be no services.
So you know, when you do ask people, do you want to drive less? I mean, CDOT does a survey, you know, every year. Mm-hmm. The vast majority of Charlottians say they want to drive less. They want to ride transit more and walk more and bike more. But the reality is, as you're saying, I think a lot of people don't want to pay for that, mm-hmm. right? But these transportation is very expensive, and we have all the plans in place. What we don't have is the resources. So I don't think there's a sufficient political will at the moment. We need more of our leaders to step up and do it.
And there are people who don't want to pay the taxes for another reason, which we'll get to in a moment when we come back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the North Carolina Museum of Art, presenting Gloria Venice, Masterworks from the Italian Renaissance that changed the course of painting forever. The exhibit runs through June 18, details at ncartmuseum.org. And from the Pump House Restaurant, featuring a Southern-inspired cuisine and a restored multi-level pump house with a rooftop bar, located at the Riverwalk in Rock Hill. More information at rockhillpumphouse.com. Last week, a U.S. Navy warship challenged a Chinese artificial island in the South China Sea. It was the first such incident during the Trump administration. Coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock, On Point will be talking with an historian who says the U.S. and China could be headed for a military conflict. That's coming up on Point following Charlotte Talks, here on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE.
We'll be right back.
All Things Considered on WFAE helps you go beneath the surface of the day's news.
These are the federal subsidies paid to insurers in order to help cover the cost of premiums and out-of-pocket medical expenses for lower-income families and individuals.
There's more to every story. Listen weekday afternoons from 4 to 6:30 for All Things Considered from NPR News and 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about Charlotte traffic, congestion, transit, planning, and more with Shannon Binns. He's the founder and executive director of Sustain Charlotte. John Muth is deputy director of CATS. Ed McKinney, the interim planning director for the city of Charlotte, and Dan Gallagher, planning manager for Charlotte DOT. So just before the break, we were talking about how it would take taxes, more tax money, more investment from taxpayers to expand transit and do all the things that ideally would make this a really easy city to get around in with lots of different options. And in fact, Charlotte Transit is looking at asking for $6 billion. This is on top of the $5 billion 25-year plan for just roads and things like that, $6 billion to expand the rail system, the bus system, the streetcar system over time, correct?
Right. That's an estimate on what it would take maybe to do the Silver Line, the line to the airport, and a line to the northern communities, just in current dollars. So,
is that something that you really believe in your heart will ever happen?
Yes, I do.
Why?
It might not happen in my career, but I think it's critical. I mean, I think we've seen the benefits of the Blue Line. We know how excited people are for the Lynx Blue Line extension. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've been working on transportation issues in this community for over 28 years. When I first got here, I was with Charlotte DOT, and I participated in road widening projects and intersection projects, and that showed me the importance of a balanced system. So I think, you know, it might happen later than sooner if that's the way it is.
Let me ask you this then, because Boston has a subway system. New York has a subway system. Chicago has some kind of a rapid transit system. L.A. even has a system, and so does Atlanta. But these other northeastern cities have these extensive transportation systems. The South doesn't. We're lagging far behind. But there was an ability to build those in the early 20th century. Where has that ability gone? Why can't we do big things anymore like this that make sense, that save money, that lower congestion, that improve the quality of life? Why?
Well, I think some of these projects take many years to develop. So sometimes, you know, you were talking about political will and folks being around long enough to see those projects
occur. But there is this hunger. People have been asking for light rail to Matthews for years now.
Right.
There's a hunger for it. And if you have to take Independence Boulevard in or out, you understand the hunger for it. So if there's a hunger among the population, why haven't we done it?
I'm not sure. I would say it's a funding issue.
Which is tax dollars, right?
Right. I mean, it could be a variety of tools used to generate the funds to do these projects.
Okay.
But
I'll posit an answer to that question. I think, you know, we have a very largely a citizenry that's not very engaged in politics in Charlotte. I mean, I think, what was it, two mayoral races ago, I mean, the turnout was in single digits. It's very, very low. And so, you know, I think if this is important to citizens, as you're saying, and I agree with you, I think a lot of people are hungry for it. We have to ensure that we only elect folks who actually are willing to make the investments that are needed, right? And if they don't make those investments, we need to elect someone else. And I don't think we're quite there yet as citizens here in Charlotte to do that, to really follow through and hold local elected officials accountable to that.
One of the things that you brought up, and I think you used the word storage with regard to these apartments, you're paying a part of your rent essentially to store your car. And when you think about that, I read that a couple of weeks ago, and it actually shocked me. When you actually think about how much money you pay for your car and then pay to operate the car and maintain the car versus the number of hours that you spend in the car. Most of the car's life is spent in storage.
It is.
Either in a parking space or your garage someplace. That's insanity.
I think it's well over 90% of the time your car is stored, not being moved.
So when you realize that, maybe this figures into this other part of the equation, because there are people who say we should not build out the rail system because it's antiquated 20th century technology, and in 10 or 15 years, We'll be in a driverless car Uber situation where people won't need a car because all they'll have to do is get on their app and it'll pick them up and take them where they want to go. Why own a car? And
congestion would be even worse in that scenario. That doesn't remove cars from the road. It increases them.
But they're driverless cars. Won't they be talking to each other and things will be moving along and you won't have to be annoyed about having to be stuck in traffic because you'll be able to do other things while you're in traffic.
Well, I think people are doing other things in traffic today.
Yes, they are.
and they're still complaining about it. So, you know, the driverless car technology can and I think will reduce our need for parking, and that's another reason we should be building less of it. But it's not going to reduce congestion. And that's the real, I think, thing that a lot of people are overlooking. If our real concern is, you know, having less people drive, driverless cars are not going to solve that particular issue. They have some benefits, but they're not going to solve the congestion problem. In my opinion, they'll worsen it.
Speaking of congestion, in the break, Dan, you mentioned that congestion, although the perception may be among those of us who live inside the Route 4 loop, the Woodlawn Road, those of us who live inside that loop have noticed how much congestion has worsened in that area. You're saying it's worse outside the loop.
Yeah, that's correct. So first of all, congestion has increased across the city as we've come out of the recession. During the recession, we solved the congestion problem because there were fewer jobs and fewer people going to jobs during peak hours. So traffic congestion dropped down. But I did want to mention that there is generally the people's intuition is that traffic must be worse in the more dense urban parts of Charlotte. And in fact, our analysis shows that traffic congestion is actually worse outside of Route 4 from about 4 miles on out. And our primary reasoning for that is we believe it's because that's where your street network breaks down. Inside Route 4, you have a really tight grid network of streets. There's many options for getting around.
Like they're connected.
Great connectivity. Mm. That broke down, going back to Shannon's point, from about World War II onward. We started moving towards more of a disconnected local street system. And with that, you have fewer options to get around. So outside of Route 4, when we look at our analysis, where people are really struggling with congestion is in those areas. And that's when I mentioned that there's many different facets to the city, that's a good example of different characteristics impacting how people get around and what their congestion levels are.
The city has something called complete streets. What is that?
Complete streets is an approach where when we build a street, when we widen a street, when we build a new street, we're going to build it as a complete street. Basically, it has all the characteristics for people to travel from point A to point B, regardless of how they want to travel. They want to travel by car, they want to travel by bike, they want to travel by foot, or ultimately to use transit. Those streets are good for all those user types. With that comes a different approach in design. So the designs of our streets today look more like the streets that were designed 80 years ago than they do the ones that were designed 30 years
ago. Well, NCDOT says these streets generally include sidewalks, bicycle lanes, transit stops, appropriate street widths and speeds, and are well integrated with surrounding land uses. Well, I'm not sure what that means, but complete street design elements that emphasize safety, mobility, and accessibility for multiple modes may include crosswalks and bus lanes and landscaping and lighting, signaling systems, adequate separation between sidewalks and streets. We sit here on 7th Street. Is this a complete street?
So 7th Street is not a complete street. It's
got a sidewalk.
It does have a sidewalk. It's very tight travel lanes. There isn't much shade along that street, certainly no bikeways. But that's the point. When we have an opportunity, if we were rebuilding 7th Street, we would probably do it a little differently, just like we've rebuilt other streets across the city and thought about it.
Give me an example of where you've done this. What has been turned into a complete street?
Sure. So good example would be any road that we've widened in recent years. So Fred D. Alexander, Valentine Commons Parkway, any of those types of roads are roads that we have built more complete street features into. We'll be doing a lot more of those types of projects here as we go to implement the Transportation Action Plan.
I think if I could add one significant street where we're doing this is North Tryon Street from Old Concord Road out to the university. That's the area where the Lynx Blue Line extension will be, out in the median of North Tryon Street. So the project has been rebuilding that entire stretch of road, and it includes, you know, lower speeds, bicycle lanes, planting strips, sidewalks. So it's been given the complete streets improvement, you know, treatment. And, you know, that again, that's critical to, for folks to gain access to the transit system.
Shannon, you've been on this program a lot in the past, and many times you've talked about bicycle lanes and using bikes as transportation, not just as recreation. And there is talk of adding protected bike lanes, particularly downtown. Where do we stand in terms of the number of people now who use bicycles for transportation? Has it grown substantially? And where are we with providing these protected bike lanes?
So biking for transportation is just like, you know, transit or walking. There are certain elements that need to be in place. And one of the core elements is you need a network of bike lanes that connect to each other, and they need to feel safe. And we're very far from that in Charlotte right now, which isn't to say we haven't been adding facilities. But for the average rider, those facilities we have added are not comfortable or not safe, and they often don't connect to other facilities. So because of that, we haven't seen a big growth in use. We've seen some growth, but not a big growth. It's still a very small percent of the population who are traveling that way. So that's why our organization has been advocating for protected bike lanes for over a year now. We actually launched a campaign last March to asking the city to build a protected bike lane through Center City, connecting the Little Sugar Creek and the Irwin Creek Greenways that flank uptown. And that project is being studied, and CDOT intends to build that in the future. But we need to build, we think, a lot more of those and as soon as possible to make it an alternative to driving, a viable alternative.
Charlotte has been adding trails and greenways as part of its master plan for quite a while now. The Cross Charlotte Trail just opened another segment a couple of weeks ago. What does that connect to, and how important are these trails and greenways to the transportation system?
Yeah, we think they're really important, and we think they're part of the future. So you mentioned the Cross Charlotte Trail. It'll roughly run about 26 miles from the South Carolina line to the Cabarrus County line. It'll link roughly from the Pineville area through uptown and ultimately out to UNC Charlotte and ultimately the Cabarrus County line, running almost in parallel with the Blue Line extension as it moves northward. So within a half mile of that trail is 80,000 residents and 100,000 jobs. And so when we talk about thinking of the future and where we might be able to position people to live in car-light lifestyle option areas, the Cross Charlotte Trail is one of those options. It's going to become the highway for bikes and peds in our city. And I think it's just a start. If there is one project, maybe in addition to the Blue Line extension, that seems to really get people's passion and excitement going, it's the Cross Charlotte Trail. And I think there'll be a lot of interest in doing extensions off of that and other Cross Charlotte Trail-like facilities that people will be demanding in the future.
When we first started talking about this was a completely new and foreign idea to me. And now the more I hear about it and the fact that I've actually used it myself, yeah, I understand it now. Is this a kind of build it and they will come concept?
Yes, but it's almost like you can see it happening. You are, like you said, there are segments of the Cross Charlotte Trail via the Little Sugar Creek Greenway that are already in place, and you see the usage along there. Now, when you imagine beginning to connect up Freedom Park and Metropolitan and NODA and the UNC Charlotte area and be able to connect those to station areas along the Blue Line extension, I think you can see that it's going to be used. And I think it also has the ability to really shape the way development occurs.
A New York City transit expert came to town. We love it when Northerners come to town and tell us how to do things. But they came to town recently and made recommendations about Charlotte dropping its focus on cars, making our streets more pedestrian and bicycle friendly, and to move quickly and take chances and allow ourselves to make mistakes. And she pointed to what they've done in Times Square, where they have closed that to traffic and given pedestrians the whole kit and caboodle here. And they didn't know what it was going to do. They didn't know if it was going to work. And it did. They were fortunate that it did. are we willing to take those chances? Is the city is this, do city ordinances allow us to take those chances?
Yes. I think maybe historically we've been a little more risk averse as a place than other cities, but I think we've done some great things. Our open streets program over the last year now, where we've really provided folks the ability to see our urban places and our streets in a different way, the trail systems that we're building. So I think we've got more to do, but certainly we are a place that's willing to take those risks and to test those things out. The other thing I would say is, you know, the build it and they will come mentality. I think the other thing we're seeing nationally is private investment is wanting to go and growing to go into these places that are walkable. The investment that's happening nationally is more and more in places like our uptown, like our South Parks, like our activity centers. We're finding that trend. So it's really important for us to provide the amenities, to shape the infrastructure in a place to couple that with the private investment. So it's not just about what we provide from a public investment standpoint. We're matching that with where a private investment wants to go and couple that in a way that creates kind of synergies about the public and private investment to create a really strong, vibrant, economically strong places.
I have about 30 seconds left. And Shannon, I know that you and your organization want to make driving less convenient. So which comes first, making driving less convenient or providing transportation options so they don't have to drive? Very quickly.
So we don't want to make driving less convenient. We want to make not driving more convenient. And I think there's an important distinction. So we've made driving convenient. We think we need to take the same approach to biking, walking, and transit. And we so far, investments in those other modes really pale in comparison to what we've invested in driving.
You get the last word, because it costs a lot to drive to keep that car up and the roads up.
Average, it costs over $8,000 a year.
There you go. Shannon Binns, founder, executive director of Sustain Charlotte, John Muth, deputy director of CATS, Ed McKinney, interim planning director for the city of Charlotte, and Dan Gallagher, planning manager for Charlotte DOT. Thank you all for the hour. Drive carefully.